As only yesterday Ian Lennox was in short trousers and dreaming some sort of wonderful way of Bobby Moore lifting the trophy, and now, of course, lifting the trophy Harry Kane, and oh, let's not say anything, shh, shh. Last night, Ian Lennox, good morning, by the way.
Good morning.
Graham Harper, BAFTA award-winning director, effectively was quite vitriolic in his criticism and indeed condemnation of the Colombian footballers. As a Newcastle United supporter, it's a case of if only the lads could play like the Colombian people did on a regular basis, the world would be a happier place.
Well, they got a bit volatile at times, didn't they? What I can't understand is little Argentinian chap with the hand of God, man.
That would be Diego. Diego Maradona.
Diego Maradona. He claimed that it was the penalty was Kane's fault.
Mm.
That the referee was totally biased, etc. And he went and some of his criticism was just on the.
This is, of course, the same Maradona who's actually classified Lionel Messi as being a clown. So he's obviously got very, very good critical reviews from that point of view. And, of course, the same Diego Maradona who's gesticulating to the crowd in various bizarre ways. And, frankly, looks a little ill, I have to say. Mm. Not sick, ill. There we are. Yeah. Just want to make that quite clear. He's not sick in a kind of vernacular side of things.
Yeah.
I think there are issues with Diego that, you know, clearly. Maybe it's conscience. Maybe he realises that back in 1986, that raised hand, which, of course, VAR, making the sign now, would have actually identified as being not good at all. Maybe it's all come back to haunt him, you see.
Yeah, but it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, both the English and the Colombians saw the same match.
Mm.
And the different conclusions are extraordinary.
Yeah, but then again, the Colombian manager is called Peckerman, which is great comedy value, if nothing else, really. So I just find the name very confusing. I just want to say, Peckerman! So you expect Woody Woodpecker to effectively be your sort of thing. Sorry, obviously that's not a slight against the Colombian coach. I'm sure he did very well indeed, but he's taken them home to Colombia. Thank you.
Yeah.
And the relief of seeing England actually win. I mean, Christian, you said you just recovered yesterday. What? Where did you watch it? Describe your experiences of watching England-Colombia in the round of 16.
I just watched it at home with a few friends, and you know, we had a few drinks and that. And as the match went on, watching how the Colombians were playing and how dirty they were playing. I mean, it was. It was ridiculous.
You scuff up the penalty spot.
Yeah.
You do various other bits.
Just little old things like that, and the headbutt.
But when you get one of the coaches actually shoulder charging one of our players, he leaves the pitch. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
And Raheem Sterling, in case you're wondering, plays for Manchester City, and he was the one who was shoulder charged.
And that just seemed to have summed up the entire match. And then obviously we went to penalties, and that was when I was stood up, head in my hands, like biting my nails, watching it. And
because you're a relatively young Christian, you're not aware of the huge history of England's penalty shootout failures over the years. I mean, those of us who go back to 1990 and before will sort of realise that the pain that's actually there. You know.
Oh, I'm definitely aware. I wasn't alive for it,
no,
but I'm definitely
exactly
aware of it. Yeah, and that's why I was so.
The response of Ian Wright and Gary Neville and indeed Lee Dixon, I think, probably said it all. Mark Pugach, I think, was posing a bit, to be honest, if I'm saying. I think Pugach, he was probably posing for the cameras, but the notion of Wrighty and Lee Dixon and even Gary Neville, I think they were sort of, it was very tense, very tense from that point of view. Still,
there's another thing I was quite pleased with, actually. There was a mounting witch hunt against the England goalkeeper, which was entirely unjustified, I thought. Mm. And has since been, my opinion has been since been backed up by some superior, some very, very good goalkeepers, including Peter Shilton. And he actually they accused him of using his wrong arm to try to save the ball that the Belgians scored the goal, and in fact it's absolute nonsense. He did exactly the right thing to try to do it. He was in slightly the wrong position. That was the trouble. But the actual penalty he saved, he used exactly the same technique. In fact, he used, when you dive to the normal thinking is that when you dive to the right, you use your right arm out of the underarm to try and save the ball. But if a ball's at a certain height, you can't reach it with your underarm, so you use your overarm, the left hand, in other words. And if you look at the penalty, he dives, and he actually saves the ball with the overarm. It's exactly the same technique.
And who would have thought that a Newcastle United fan would have actually been saying, well, that's one Mackham saving another Mackham, ex-Mackham, of course,
no, I don't
with,
George, to do with that.
Jordan Henderson and, indeed, Mr Pickford.
The press was starting to say things like he's possibly too small, he's 5'11". Mm. But more important than his height, he's built.
He's taller than you,
Ian.
He's taller than you.
He can go through defenders and get and other forwards and get the ball.
Exactly. And people,
I mean, you know, these things.
People didn't used to say that Willie McPhail was too small, did they?
Well, Ronnie Simpson, one of the best goalers we ever had. He won a European Championship.
4'2" he was. 4'2".
No, exactly. So. We used to stick him up in the garden in the winter.
Exactly. Like a little garden gnome doing his stuff from that point of view. We'll talk about this in times to come. But Christian, you must be. I mean, what are your thoughts on the new season with Leeds United? I mean, do you feel as though there's a great anticipation here with respect to new managers and lines from that? Do you think this could be the moment where you kind of rise through the championship, or is it a case of just holding back a little bit?
Wait till September. Yeah. No, actually, not wait till September. Wait,
you know,
till
what people are
December.
Saying about Leeds, they're via guillotines and get through managers quicker.
Yeah, exactly. And it always seems to be wait till December, January, when the season's gotten off and we're getting to the midway point, and that's when it either goes to.
I mean, you know, English football needs a very strong Leeds United side, which they had in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
It's a balance. North through the south and north east through the west.
It's extraordinary. Now, Ian, if you're kind enough to stay with us until we actually have the news, after the news we might be connected by some of our students who are over in Malaysia and actually in KDU Penang University. That's assuming the technology actually works to connect via sort of computer system. If it doesn't, we'll talk more about the World Cup and a few other bits and pieces. We've still got, as promised, a Love Island feature with Linda Papadopoulos. Did you watch it, Ian, by the way?
I didn't.
I didn't think you would. We've also got Joe Wadsack on wine and probably Joe Warwick about where chefs eat. That's all to come on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Are you happy to take a momentary break, Ian? And we'll be back with you, hopefully, shortly after the news in about 4 minutes from now.
Yes, I am.
Siren Radio. And the weather today in Lincolnshire, at least, highs of 27 degrees centigrade, lows of 14 degrees centigrade, and it's going to be a sunny and breezy day. Don't you wish you were in Lincoln, Ian Lennox?
Well, I'm happy to be here. It's nice weather up here as well, you know.
Are you making the coffee in the background there, by the way, Ian? Is that a coffee percolator that I heard going on?
No, that was it, my draining my sink. You caught me. Caught me doing housework.
draining the sink? Not a euphemism, don't worry. He's draining the sink in all sorts of ways there. Okay, moving on. It doesn't look as though our KDU Penang connection is going to quite work. I'm still looking at the computer screen here like some kind of strange, mystical soul from the days of Stonehenge, where I'm sure people will actually say, well, you know, when they're watching the first World Cup final, they said, of course, this will all be converted into a henge afterwards, basically. There's a little line from current edition of Private Eye. Ian, overall, are you happy with the tournament, or is it a case of you'd be a lot happier if you weren't joint bottom of the Midweek Drive little predictor league?
Now, who's my companion that's down the bottom?
Well, that'd be me, actually. Yeah,
it's okay.
It's all right. You know?
We're beaten by a girl, aren't we?
Don't be sexist, Ian. You know, at the end of the day, I'm shocked at your good self, Ian, to actually come out. The fact that Jenny Finch has managed to score 10 points ahead of 6 points for Rob Nichols and 4 points for both of us is just by the by, you know? It's what happens when you get 6 points for a correct result. We'll be featuring this again on Monday.
Got a score correct, did she?
She got an absolute score correct, yes. Knocked out of the park, that's where she got her 6 points from, you see.
Yeah, it's all bit of luck, that, isn't it?
you've changed
Grumpy
your tune.
Says.
But still all to play for. When we get the semi-final lineup, we'll be predicting those, and who knows what could happen for the Tuesday and Wednesday session. Anyway, that's another thing. How have you found the tournament? Has it been, you know, a case of, well, what did you expect? We had that wonderful Vladimir Putin's country coordinating it, so we expected good things.
I think it's been a fantastic tournament in every way. I think all the stadia have been wonderful. It's apparently the Russian people themselves have been absolutely fantastic to all the other fans.
But isn't this the case, Ian, that actually that's at the heart of the whole thing, that actually if you could put all the politicians on some kind of Love Island, no offence, and put them somewhere from that point of view, actually people, no matter where they come from in the globe, we kind of get along, don't we, usually?
Yes, we do. That's
a sort of positivity.
And I mean, in the last 50 years, tourism has expanded at a huge rate, and that's what it's shown. Yeah. People do get on.
And, you know, maybe I'm just sort of, you know, in that nostalgic mode, but I think actually 100 years back we were basically killing each other in Flanders fields and all across Europe. I think it's a lot better to actually have that kind of challenge that we got in the World Cup with a sporting challenge, shall we say.
Well, it's war by another means, isn't it, really? Yeah, I suppose should have said.
And unless you're Neymar, nobody gets killed or shot. just a line there.
Why does he go for high diving with his rules? He could win the gold, couldn't he?
It is phenomenal. I mean, clearly he's been taking a leaf out of the Tom Daly book there in terms of the best way to coordinate.
I mean, it's such a shame, isn't it? I mean, what a gifted footballer he is. He's a fantastic player. And he's just, I mean, people don't sort of remember him for that. They're going to remember him for his ridiculous histrionics.
And rather like the boy who cried wolf, one day when he is fouled, he probably won't get the penalty at all.
There's certainly going to be reaction because the referees do see these, they study these things and they're having conferences and things.
Then again, there's always VAR.
Yeah.
Christian, your thoughts on the tournament? I mean, is this your second tournament as a World Cup fan?
No, I very vaguely remember the 2002 one in Japan and mm-hmm. South Korea. And ever since then, all the other ones coming up from it was 2010 and
2010, 2014,
etc. And
the years of Capello, Roy Hodgson, Sven-Göran Eriksson,
as well.
Steve McLaren didn't quite get there, did he?
No. But I've enjoyed it. I mean, I always enjoy the football tournaments. I love them. I wait every 2 years to watch the Euros and then the World Cup anyway, so I'm always on board with them. It's just nice to see England doing slightly better than what we've done in the last ones, and hopefully we carry it on and see how far we can get. But
well, the thing is, they're such a young team, they're going to improve.
Yeah.
Dangerous thinking that, Ian. I'll tell you the reason why. Always looking to the future, that gold generation, I think they need to do it now. That's the key thing. Then it's done.
Well, they are starting to do it now. I mean, he's revolutionised the tactics. He's got, and he doesn't play four at the back, he plays three at the back, and he plays three footballers at the back who can move the ball up more intelligently than we have done in the past. I mean, the classic England way of playing football was the defenders to find somebody who could play football and pass to them. And that was it. Either that, they kicked the ball 60 yards up the pitch. Mm. And, I mean, for years we did this. I remember a German left back in the 70s, I think it was, called Paul Breitner. And he said, England plays stupid football.
Yes,
and well, there was the press over here went for him. But he was right. We did. We played basically on muscle and fitness.
Although we have to say, if you actually use the magical world of the internet to actually Google Paul Breitner, that Afro hairstyle, Paul, what were you thinking back in 1974? I mean, please, you might have been scoring some goals.
Look here, Alex, I'm having that. Anybody who Kevin Keegan in a minute, it can't be all bad.
Are you saying that Keegan's hairstyle?
Well, he had an Afro hairstyle.
Exactly, precisely. Even Charlie George. Let's just, there are certain things you just think, no, it's just not a good look, really. Favourite team other than England, then, in the tournament for yourself, Ian?
The most dangerous team to us?
Favourite team, not dangerous
favorite.
Team.
I'm not sure, really. I like the Belgians because they're such a small country and they've got so many gifted players. I don't know.
There we are. That's Paul Breitner. Now, tell me, Christian, you're looking at that. Now, that is, you know, that's just a serious afro there.
a strong hairstyle.
And the mustache as well.
You got
the mustache as well as the hairstyle. You know, that's. I mean, you know, Beckenbauer and Bertie Vogts, I think their hairstyles have stood the test of time. Paul Breitner, not so much. But then, like,
you should not be allowed to bring your Google into the studio.
It's even down here in terms of the Sun. It's second channel down. Paul Breitner, colon, the bushy-haired, bearded German defender. You know,
right.
He built a whole career on that basis. Your favourite side, Christian?
I think I might have to agree and go with Belgians. For the same reasons as well. And their side is, especially their attack is.
So no Croatian secret fans there. Or indeed, isn't it nice to see Russia work their way through effectively?
I have to admit, yeah, as for a home nation as well, I think that is good.
Yeah, good, isn't it?
Yeah. And they've proven themselves as well. Then they haven't kind of gotten through on just kind of luck. They seem to be weaker teams.
I think. And you suspect when they meet one of the really good ones, they'll come down to earth a bit, but certainly they've certainly progressed more than they thought they were going to.
I feel like I feel like Croatia could just have something on them, especially with some of the players that Croatia have as well.
Yeah, I think was it Uruguay did a job on them, didn't they? 3-0 or something like that.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Okay, so just for fun, because this is obviously not the official Fly Me to the Moon package that we've come through from that point of view, shall we just have a little quiz between ourselves in terms of what our predictions are going to be for these games and so on? Starting off with the first quarterfinal, that's between Uruguay and France. What's your prediction, Christian?
France.
Score?
France to win. Ooh, 2-1.
In 90 minutes or after 90 minutes?
I'd say 90 minutes.
In 90 minutes. Yeah. Ian?
France 2-0 in 90 minutes. Okay. I think France is probably the best team in the competition.
Brazil-Belgium? Ian, go first on this one.
Well, despite what I said about Belgium, I think Brazil might have a bit too much for them. I don't know. I'll go for a draw in 90 minutes.
A draw in 90 minutes. So, 1-1, 2-0, 2-2? What's your sort of...
Oh, dear me. 2-2.
2-2.
Like
Christian?
Yeah, I'm thinking penalties. I think it could go all the way to penalties.
Ian's overcome. He's choking on the whole system. Clear the sink. Clear the sink, Ian. Clear the sink. Uruguay, France, I'll say 2-1 to Uruguay. And Brazil 2, Belgium 0, both within 90 minutes. Okay, critical time now. Sweden, England. Christian?
6-0, England. Straight away. It's coming home.
Ian.
Put it down.
Ian.
1-0 England, 90 minutes.
2-1 to England, possibly after extra time. In fact, I'll say after extra time. 2-1 to England after extra time.
I think it will probably go to
extra time. Yes, you're going to have a possibly, Alex. That's an issue.
Sees Newcastle United.
Oh, yes, I know. I already said possibly.
Yeah. Okay. Russia, Croatia.
I suspect Croatia will win that one.
Okay, and Christian?
2-1.
2-1. I'd say Croatia. Possibly 2, but maybe 1-0 to Croatia.
1-0 to Russia, I'll say. 1-0 to Russia. Within the time.
Yeah.
Because I've got heartsick of the former Croatia.
They're the teams we'll meet in the semi-final if we beat Sweden, aren't they? Yeah. Croatia and Russia.
Yes. Don't look ahead, Ian. We're a step at a time.
Oh, I'm looking ahead.
I mean, you're the sort of person who would actually sort of say, I'm not interested in the World Cup final because I prefer the Wimbledon final.
I'm trying to predict the European Championships in 2 years' time.
That's going to be very complex. We don't even know which countries they're going to be in. Apart from that, the semi-finals are in Britain. It's very, very strange. Ian Lennox, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have. Can I just say one thing before I go? Congratulations to Tess, one of your guests on the
Tessa
show.
Tess Snow, first-class honours, yes. Midweek driver, on the game. It's quite rightly so. Well done, Tess
Snow.
That's right. And Hannah also did the business from that point of view. And all
I didn't know that.
Said very well, yes, exactly. So that's right. Okay, sort of through. So you have said congratulations, and that will be duly represented. She will return someday. She actually sent me an email yesterday saying she will return, hopefully for one of the other things, once she gets bedded down, because she's doing some fabulous work now with a company called Declaration. So that's great stuff. They're writing press releases, business-to-business stuff, and a whole variety of other bits and pieces. So there you are. Journalism graduate working in journalism. See, Christian? It's amazing.
Wow. Yeah,
it's it's outrageous. So back again, possibly next week, Ian, assuming we're actually live in this particular area. We might have to juggle things around. And I know you're back on another programme for us on Monday, so you will return in, will you not?
Okay, yep. All afternoon doing
about you. Spend sleepless nights to think about you. You said you love me. Or were you just being kind? Or am I losing my mind? Or am I losing my mind? You said you loved me, or were you just being kind? Or am I losing my mind? Or were you just being kind? Or am I losing my mind? Losing my mind.
Hey ho, losing my mind, losing a link, never mind. Happy good morning to Sarah Hain, who's been tuned in, sorting out a variety of other bits and pieces here, endeavouring to sort out with Winnie, of course, in KDU Penang, a connection with our students who are over there, who will have just stepped out of a photographic type of class. Although Sarah has responded by saying they might be out and about taking photographs and not actually in the classroom. Makes perfect sense, really. Weather like this, even in KDU, Penang University, why wouldn't you just go outside and work through that process? Good news is next week we'll be featuring some of the KDU Malay students who are currently in Britain at the University of Lincoln, and they'll be in the studio doing a few items and aspects with us. Hopefully that's being sorted through. Meanwhile, as I say, we wait and see what happens with respect to the connection. If they come through, we'll probably break into one of the next interviews that we've actually got. The next interview, of course, being, yes, the often promised but sometimes delayed Love Island views of ace psychologist, the one and only Linda Papadopoulos. So there we are. Time for Dollar. Sign up, the quantity fallacy, the Hollywood complex, mini-mancers, rejection, and dating burnout. Six steps which clearly do not lead to happiness or indeed health in a whole variety of things. We refer to this as Love Island Syndrome, as referred to by a recent eHarmony survey. And to actually begin to deal with some of these challenges, who better than to actually connect with us once again? We've regarded her as the ultimate expert par excellence in every stage relating to relationships and indeed Love Island itself. That would be the fabulous Dr. Linda Papadopoulos. How are you, Linda?
Hi there.
Okay, so let's move straight into this whole notion, this research that suggests that actually bouncing straight back into the casual dating cycle is not the best way to seek a lasting, permanent relationship.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of not. I think what tends to happen is, you know, we have a bad relationship. We feel uncomfortable about not just perhaps the future, but sometimes it affects our self-esteem, our self-confidence. And so what we do right away is we kind of, right, that's it. I'm going to sign up very quickly to, you know, to find love again. And I think, well, of course, it's important to, you know, to try and find a way of connecting with people again, figuring out what worked, what didn't work. I think what we find, though, is this sort of sense of urgency means that instead of me trying to find the right person, I just need to find another relationship. And I think that's where it becomes problematic, where we're seeking out a relationship rather than the right person to have a relationship with.
We talked about, obviously, the four stages of grief and coming to terms with that anger and so on, and final acceptance. These six stages of the Love Island syndrome are quite fascinating. Again, it all begins really when you sign up again.
Well, yeah, it does. So the cycle begins because, you know, you're newly single and, you know, you're like, right, I need to sign up to find love again. And actually we found, and, you know, when we did this research with eHarmony, that about almost half, 44% of Brits actually reactivate their dating profiles within sort of the 3 months of breaking off their previous relationship. But 15% do this within just a week. And look, again, it's, you know, of course you need to get back in there. You need to sort of move ahead. But I think for me as a psychologist, what I worry about is, you know, I think we see relationships as a meritocracy, don't we? We kind of think, you know, people that are good are in relationships and people that are, something's wrong with them, maybe they're not. And I really don't think that's the case. I think the fact of the matter is it's hard to find love. I think the things that we should be looking for long-term success, and we know this because research shows this, things like compatibility around sort of moral consciousness and IQ and having sort of life goals in common, I think they're secondary to what we look for. What we look for is people that we find attractive, that find us attractive, and that are nearby. Those are the things that really kind of direct dating, right? That proximity. So I think, you know, what this is bringing out is maybe the idea that we need to think a bit more deeply if we do want something more long-term about what those indicators are. And sometimes they aren't those easy things that you kind of think about in the beginning.
The whole notion of a scattergun effect and going on as many dates as possible is clearly going to fall foul of this in terms of the quantity fallacy, that actually more doesn't mean better.
Yeah, well, absolutely right. So if you kind of look at the research around online dating, right? So we know that actually if I, you know, if something like eHarmony or basically anything that kind of takes all the variables about you, things that maybe you didn't even know about yourself, is much more likely to be able to match you with someone and predict long-term success in a relationship. We know that people that end up getting married on sites that look at personality variables have, you know, lower rates of divorce. However, we can't predict, you know, these sites can't predict who you're going to find attractive, right? So and I think that's where this quantity fallacy comes in. So you kind of just think, well, the more people I meet, you know, the better chance I have, which I guess makes sense to a point. But actually what we're looking for here is quality rather than quantity. So again, what are you looking for? Absolutely, you should find someone attractive. But beyond that, and we can see this from Love Island, beyond that, there takes some other stuff to really keep something going.
The Hollywood complex I tend to see as somebody who almost falls in love with an ideal and maintains that ideal needs to be held above all other sort of scenarios. And it can be unrealistic sometimes to actually acknowledge that actually sometimes, actually even if you even look for looks solely, then you're missing out on a whole range of other factors.
Yeah, look, again, I think we live in such an appearance-driven world, don't we? I think we're producing more images of ourselves, consuming certainly much more.
Stay with radio, Linda. It's a wonderful sort of line.
I think so. I think it's a bit deeper, right? I think. But look, again, you're right. 77% of people, and again, this research was done by YouGov, 2,000 people, so quite robust research. 77% report physical appearance as being kind of, you know, at the top of their top three. Having said that, it was nice to find that this was followed by values and ambition. And that stuff's, I think, you know, more important, because that's the kind of stuff that doesn't change. I always say this to my daughter, don't put all your eggs in the beauty basket, because that's the first thing to go, damn. It doesn't stick around long.
Sense of humor, personality, reliability, enthusiasm, these are all valuable characteristics which I think adds to the whole sort of connection as well.
Of course.
The mini-mants, this whole notion that, again, it goes ties in with sort of quantity and so on, that actually if you have met someone online, most relationships fail to make it past the six-month mark, and half of the 18 to 34-year-olds who've connected online have not had a relationship with somebody that they've met that's lasted any longer than a year.
Yeah, so we kind of see this sort of serial kind of monogamy happening. And look, again, part of that is normal. But I also, do you know what? I do wonder if we, you know, we live in such a society of disposability, right? So, you know, everything's kind of one use. You've got cheap clothes that you buy and you wear once, you don't think about it again. You know, something breaks, you just order it again on Amazon. And I think there's something to be said of that kind of building resilience into a relationship. So not just assuming that it's all going to be great and you should throw it away, like you say, after 3 months if it doesn't work, but trying to work through it, because it's like anything in life, right? The way that you learn about things is not when things are easy, it's when things are hard. Now, I'm not at any, you know, by any stretch suggesting you stick around when there's genuine incompatibility or when, you know, things don't work. But I do worry that the way that that society is set up, even these sort of drop down and click menus, right, that we have about everything, the pizzas you order, the holidays you go on, the clothes you have, I think sometimes we almost expect that from our partners. And the fact of the matter is, you know, giving something what it needs, that kind of long term, you know, success, means that some days are not great and you figure out how to get through them and you figure out how to learn about each other. So I think that mini-man stage may be reflective of this kind of, you know, disposability society we live in.
It used to be said that the male ego was probably the most fragile when it came to rejection. We just can't handle it. I think that's across the base now, but rejection equaling dejection. We know, I don't think anybody really likes to be said, no, I'm sorry, just go away.
Yeah, yeah. No, of course it doesn't. And especially when there's a disparity, as there usually is, it's not the most common thing that you both like each other exactly the same amount throughout the relationship. At some point when it sours, one person's more invested than the other. And that rejection, rather than, again, being seen as, well, this is this thing we were trying to build between us doesn't work, turns into there's something wrong with me. I'm somehow broken. I'm somehow flawed. And that's why I'm being rejected. And look, again, none of us are perfect people. We absolutely all have things to learn. I think it's great to be able to have that presence of mind to think, okay, what can I learn from this? What can I take away? But I think also internalizing somebody else's issues. So if you've rejected me because, and again, we saw this, you see this in these, you know, these dating shows online, you know, on TV, you know, someone cuter comes in, someone bubbly or whatever, and this, you know, the person rejects
you. New shiny toys, new shiny beings, puppies.
Well, this is it. And you kind of think, well, should I internalize that? If that's what you're looking for, does it say something about me? Or does it say something about you? So I think, you know, it's treading that line between what can I learn about doing something better or healthier in my next relationship, but also if it's not about me and it's about this person I was dating, I need to leave it with them.
Of course, it could be so exhausting that at the end of the day, you just suffer from dating burnout. It's just, let's not go anywhere from that point of view.
I know. Well, 1 in 5 people in our study, they reported that they would, give up online dating entirely. And over a third reported needing to take a break. And that's right, because they, you know, looking for love is not an easy thing. It is tiring. And, you know, I'm kind of saying it partly tongue in cheek, but it's true. You know, you put yourself out there, you put your emotions on the line, and you ask someone, to accept you. And that, you know, don't forget, you know, self-acceptance isn't easy at all. You know, it's kind of a very human struggle to be able to look at the mirror and like what you see. And I don't mean that just physically. I mean that as, you know, in terms of our identity.
Let's not go into narcissism. That's a whole different
area. No, but again, when someone, like you say, when someone says, this isn't for me, instead of kind of thinking, okay, we're incompatible, what do we do? Or like, well, this is, you know, this is rejection. If others are rejecting me, maybe, you know, I'm somehow broken, I'm somehow flawed. And I think you're right. That does lead to that kind of feeling of dejection that we see.
Finding out further details, Linda, where's the best place to go?
Visit the eHarmony website. There's tons of really interesting information about that. And again, this this great piece of research they've done on Love Island syndrome will kind of, I think, guide you into looking at the do's and don'ts when it comes to dating.
And certainly in terms of social media, at Dr. Linda P is a go-to place as well. Linda, it's been fabulous as ever.
Thank you.
Know the two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting and satisfying telephonic link with us today? Has it been okay for
you? As always, always love being on the show. Thank you so much for having me.
In which case, we can look forward to featuring again, hopefully in the not too distant future.
Brilliant.
I know I can't take one more step towards you, 'cause all that's waiting is regret. And don't you know I'm not your ghost anymore? You lost the love I loved the most. Learn to live half alive, and now you want me one more time. And who do you think you are, running around leaving scars, collecting a jar of hearts and tearing love apart? You're gonna catch a cold from the inside your soul, so don't come back for me. Who do you think you are? I hear you're asking all around if I am anywhere to be found, but I have grown too strong. You broke all your pride.
wonderful bottle of wine after the Three Lions have actually done the business in the World Cup. We're obviously referring to the Three Lions Inn on the edge of the New Forest in Hampshire. No, we're referring to various other bits and pieces there. Couldn't resist it, Joe.
Very well done.
But we had to say welcome to awesome wine guru and general all-round celebrity wine expert, host of BBC's Food and Wine Show. Of course it is Joe Wadsock. How are you, Joe?
Very well. How do you do, Alex?
Excellent. Well, as I say, who can be better, say, from that point of view? I trust your parents are taking full credit for the success in the penalty shootout.
Yeah, well, absolutely. In fact, my mother's Swedish, so the next game is going to be quite hard to call for me. At least I've got a plan B. If we don't win, we win. That's the way
exactly. Let's talk about this particular survey, though, that has just been released by Ian J. Gallo's Dark Horse, and it suggests that 58% of British folk aren't confident about their knowledge of wine, to the extent that actually 73% feel intimidated when they actually see a wine list.
So I know, right?
Can we help?
Well, I think that that wine lists are always going to be intimidating, I think. And what you need to do is just know where you can find the information you want. When you're in a restaurant, you have the double problem of not being able to see the bottle of wine you're going to order. So what I would strongly recommend, and I've done this, I spoke to my daughter about this, who's now at university, and she's asked me about wine advice and that sort of thing. And I said, well, look, if you go to a pub to buy a bottle of wine and sit down with whoever your date is for a bite to eat, go up to the bar and ask to look at the bottle beforehand. And the information is on the back. The amount of information they actually put on bottles these days is quite surprising. If you pick up any bottle of Dark Horse from California and you look at the back label, it'll tell you what it goes with, what temperature it should be drunk at, how long it'll keep, all the information that a sommelier would tell you anyway. And also you can have a kind of a feel for whether you want to buy it or not. I think seeing the bottle is actually helpful. But when you look at a wine list, especially a wine list that's got quite a few bottles on it, you know, anything over 50, there's bound to be. Even for moderate enthusiasts, there's bound to be 30 wines on that list they've never heard of before or don't recognise. And I think that's the problem. It's the foreign language. It's the fact that a lot of the wines on a list, certainly half of them, they probably don't sell many bottles of, but they're probably over £50 or something in a posh restaurant these days. And that's a lot of money. So you're instantly looking at a list where you know that if you draw a line through the middle of it, the bottom half is a complete stranger to you. So I'm not surprised that people feel quite scared and kind of apprehensive when they order wine at a restaurant, to be honest.
In terms of actually budget costs and so on, what is the reasonable amount? Because clearly, as you say, there's the top end of the scale, there's the low end of the scale, yeah. There's the scale which you think, oh, don't even go there from that point of view. What would you suggest is pretty much the sort of the happy average?
Well, I think if you're going to buy wine in a multiple retailer or a supermarket or your local wine shop, I think the days when you're trying to find the cheapest wine on the shelf, I know those days are numbered. That doesn't.
Okay, Joe, those days are numbered, but hopefully the number has actually been sorted and we can actually say Nathan Pettit in KDU Penang. Are we connecting with your good self? Are you there, sir? Made. There we are. You see the magic of live broadcasting. Thanks to Winnie, thanks to Sarah Hain. Everybody's worked through that process. You were juggling things, going to a different studio, but you're here. And you've just been taking part in this photography session, I believe.
Yeah, we have. So we were told to go around Georgetown, which is where we are in Malaysia at the moment, and take a load of photos. And then in the studio, we've got the photos behind us and a green screen. Hey. And just explained.
You see, this is what I like about you, Nathan, because you know we're talking about photographs on the radio. You can't get much better than that, really. Siren Radio just pushing those boundaries just a wee stage further. Listen, Nathan, would you like to share who is actually with you in the studio today, connecting with us, looking around the joys of KDU Penang for what is sadly going to be the last link we've done with you guys before you start heading back to Britain? But talk us through who's there with you.
I'm here.
Yes.
I'm Caleb. I'm here. I do computer science as well.
Excellent.
I'm Ben. I do accountancy and finance.
And I'm Alex. I do computer science as well. I'm in my first year.
Brilliant. So we got computer science. We got is that three computer science people we've got there?
Yeah.
And one accountancy and finance soul. So actually, you're all making your debut as far as Siren Radio is concerned, because I don't think you guys have actually been on before, have you?
No, we haven't.
No, really. And you're probably sort of thinking we weren't going to get on today either, because various other bits, because it's all right. Success has been worked through that process. same question I've been putting to most of the students who've been over there. Let's go to Caleb first. How has the whole experience been for yourself? I mean, has it been awesome? Is it a case of, no, I want to come home now? What's it been like?
It's pretty surreal, to be honest, just to be here and seeing a whole new culture. And it is pretty amazing, but obviously you do always miss the home comforts, just being able to relax. Jeez. Relax in front of the TV and with a roast dinner or whatever. But it's amazing, just the food, and the people are so friendly, and just the sun and the beaches and the heat.
Yeah.
Okay. Alex, from your own perspective, have you enjoyed the material? Has it been good? Do you feel as though you've learned something that KDU Penang can bring to the world?
I've definitely learned about crossing roads here is a very different culture to the UK. You just sort of find a gap and just force your way through, pretty much.
Right, so zebra crossings, any kind of road sense, it's a case of you take your life in your hands. Is that the case?
Pretty much, yeah.
They don't stop it.
Yeah. So, I suppose you could say it's kill or cure. It's a way forward from that point of view. We've got a wonderful level two coming into his level two journalism student here. Christian, any questions for Nathan, Caleb, Alex, or indeed, and I've forgotten the other solo who's actually there. Who else have we got there?
Morgan.
Thank you, Morgan. That's okay. Questions, please.
Hello, guys. I was... When I was deciding to go to uni, I had a load of different unis, but all just around the country. What made you want to go to somewhere essentially halfway across the world?
Well, I think just because it was a few-week link-up where you get to see a new place in a new environment and leave your comfort zone and just experience something new. I try to live by this quote that I read a while ago, that life doesn't start until you leave your comfort zone. And I think just being able to do that and having the opportunity to do that is like the only reason. You just do it because you don't normally do it.
You're
always loved this sort of culture anyway. Like, so I'd sort of basically just jumped at the chance to actually be able to visit here.
Yeah, I was looking to go on holiday to Thailand over this summer, and then I got this email, and this is a lot cheaper.
Well, that's because you're working. You're there as an ambassador of the University of Lincoln, so clearly it's working through. It's a cross-promotion thing. Now, next week, we're hopefully going to be featuring some of the KDU Penang students who are actually over in Lincoln at present and working through that process. I gather you guys got a chance to actually say a few words with them before they came over. Is that right?
Yeah.
We met them a few days before they left and told them things that they should do whilst they're in England and Lincoln.
So I've got to ask the question, what were your recommendations? As a case of, don't forget to actually run up and down Steep Hill every morning, because that's very good for you. I mean, it's just that sort of routine there, in the same way as I said, you don't have to worry about crossing the road, because I mean, I thought you've got to offset the sort of crossing the road with running up and down Steep Hill, surely.
Yeah, I think it was just a combination of all the proper British stuff that everybody, like, that we're all so familiar with and take for granted, I guess. So eating roast dinners and going to the pub and...
visiting the Peak District and the Lake District.
Yeah. So we gave them recommendations of certain places around England.
Beautiful Luton.
Sorry, did you say beautiful Luton there? Was the signal just working out from that point of view? I thought, what, beautiful Luton?
Best place in the UK.
Apart from Lincoln, obviously. Who would have thought we'd actually talk about Luton? Ironic indeed. And of course, the need to have roast dinners when the temperature is 27 degrees centigrade, essential, I feel. You know, it's what makes us British, which is great stuff. Just in case you're wondering, you haven't sort of checked the temperatures here in Lincoln, England, it's 27 degrees centigrade today, a sunny and breezy day. How does that compare with KDU Penang?
Well, it's about 31 degrees, 32 degrees, but all the weather forecasts say it feels like 37, 38 just right. Because of the humidity.
So once again, it's 10 degrees more from that point of view. You had to say that maybe that's a bit too hot. What the
scorching,
heck?
Scorching, yeah.
Yeah, there's sort of a line that 35 degrees is just not really... It's nice to be in the heat, but it's just not comfortable
I think the nice thing about England as well is when it is hot, there's normally a cool breeze just to make you feel more comfortable. Here, there is no cool breeze ever.
Even the locals here in summer, they don't walk anywhere. They don't drive.
Well, so it goes. Now, we were talking last week with the guys. Clearly, we're in the midst of a little event that's taking place a little bit north of you, good self, in Moscow and St. Petersburg and other areas from that point of view. How has the World Cup been going down in KDU Penang? Are you still as gripped by the whole thing as ever? I mean, last week people were saying they've got teams from all areas from that sort of perspective. Have you been flying the flag of St. George? And is it true that basically it's Nathan Morgan, Alex and Caleb who are effectively the secret weapon in this sort of Gareth Southgate thing? You're the feel-good factor. Has that been followed through?
It's kind of been difficult to watch games because of the time zone.
Yeah.
But, there are actually a lot of people wearing England shirts.
Yes.
To be fair, I think a lot of the Malaysian people here are more into football than us four.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But we're still keeping up on it and trying to keep the spirit.
I thought all computer science people were passionate football fans. I thought this was a little matter of case. Stereotypes there. Goodness. I'm going to ask the question in terms of what has been your favourite experience over the last few weeks in terms of what you've been doing from that point of view. Has it been the photography? Has it been the views of this sort of system? Let's start off with Nathan. What's been your favourite experience?
Well, for me, just walking around Georgetown is my most enjoyable activity to do because it's so crazy and so busy with the traffic. And there's monkeys sometimes you can see. And I saw this big, it looked like a small alligator. It was a water monitor lizard in a storm drain.
Hmm.
It was probably about 2 foot long.
Well, there are lots of science fiction tales of where those apparent lizards in storm drains can be mutations and end up as Newton Ninja Turtles. But did it actually say cowabunga, or is that another line entirely?
It did some kung fu on me.
Yeah. Pizza, that's my suggestion. You know, as, speaking as an academic at the University of Lincoln, if in doubt, you actually find an alligator or a lizard in a storm drain, feed it pizza. Hope for the best in pizza. I'm not going to suggest what kind of pizza either. Morgan, what's been your highlight?
I think it would be all the natural beauty that you see here. Because in England, whenever you visit it, you have to kind of go out of your way to find the natural beauty. You have to go to the Peak District or the Lake District, but here it's all around you. You have trees everywhere. You can take a 10-minute drive and you can climb up Penang Hill. It's just so easy to find all the natural beauty, and especially on the train ride down to Kuala Lumpur, you could just see all the rural villages and all the mountains on the mainland, and it was just a wonderful experience.
Yeah, the contrast between urban and rural was really amazing.
Okay, and Caleb, would you echo that?
Yeah, it's certainly impressive. I think I think another thing that adds to that is the sunsets. I don't think I've ever seen a more beautiful sunset than being here. That every night it's a different colour. When we were in Langkawi, a week ago, one of the sunsets that we saw from the beach, it changed from the blue sky to green to pink and orange and red, and it just kept changing as the sunset, and it's one of the most beautiful experiences going, I think.
Now, clearly from that descriptor, I've got to say that the photographic scenario would have been a breeze, surely. So talk us through those photographs that you were going to do. Describe them, please. What sort of aspects have you actually got from that point of view? You might well say you'll put them online so social media people can actually sort of access them through Instagram and various other sort of systems. But for the moment, let's deal with the description.
Well, there's been quite a few. Some of them have been top-down shots from when we went to the top of the Comtar Tower here in Georgetown. So it's just a view of the whole city skyline. I even managed to take a long exposure shot at night time with all the car lights just passing by, faded into one. And some of the other pictures have just been a standard sort of landscape shot of all the temples here. So maybe it would be a Hindu temple, or we went to a Taoist one in the first week called Ku Kongsi, and you can tell all the architecture among it And just the colours of everything that's here, it brings out the life in every picture there is.
Now, we're looking actually using that wonderful, delightful search engine that begins with Wiki and ends nowhere. It says, Georgetown, the capital city of the Malaysian state of Penang, is located at the northeastern tip of Penang Island. It is Malaysia's second largest city with... let's have a guess here. How many inhabitants do you think it's actually got? Let's try this, see if you've done your research. Caleb, how many inhabitants do you think are there in Georgetown?
In Georgetown, I think it's something like 700,000, but in Penang, I think it's something like 8 million.
Do you know, that's I mean, in 2010, there were 700,000 inhabitants, according to this source here. Greater Penang, the nation's second biggest contribution, or conurbation, I should say, population of 2,412,000 or thereabouts. I mean, I wouldn't count every one, but it's interesting from that perspective there. Very good. That's proving that they've done the business. Christian, yeah. any other thoughts or questions for Nathan, Caleb, Alex, or Morgan?
I was just looking at a few of the photos of Georgetown, and what would you recommend to someone who was going there? What would you say this is what you must see just in Georgetown?
There's so many, to be honest.
Yeah, I think the city itself is it has an area called the Heritage Zone, or the Heritage District, and like just on one street alone there is a temple from basically every religion. There's a Christian temple, a Taoist temple, a mosque, Hindu a Buddhism temple, and a Hindu temple, and I think it's called Harmony Street. Like that isn't its official name, but that's what the locals refer to it as. And just walking down that alone, you can see the whole life of Georgetown and the atmosphere and how well each of these religions like communicate with each other. They're like there's no clashing.
Yeah, Georgetown has a really rich history with the colonial roots and with the Chinese settlers and the Indian settlers coming as well. So there's many different cultures here.
Which leads to strength, infinite diversity, infinite combinations. What's the rest of the schedule entail for the remaining days? Because are you back in Lincoln next week, guys?
Yeah, we return home on Sunday, so
it'll be Monday.
Well, yeah, I guess it'll be Monday by the time we get home. But our current plans are for tomorrow. We're going up Penang Hill and we're seeing the famous Kek Lok See Temple, which apparently are the must-sees of Penang. And then I think on Saturday,
Museum in Kerking.
Yeah, but on Saturday they're doing a heritage festival, so we're just going to walk around the heritage site and. Get lots of food and meet lots of people and just enjoy the atmosphere.
Sounds absolutely awesome. And I've got to put a question to yourself. Presumably none of you have ever entered the threshold of the Siren Radio Studio before, even though it is the University of Lincoln's very own community radio station, Lincoln's first community radio station. Have you been in Siren before?
No.
So maybe when you return, there is a place for computer science people and accountants and various other fine folk. Will you cross the threshold and maybe join us so you can actually see us live in the studio looking at photographs of KDU Penang, Malaysia, and all sorts of other things? Will you come and join us here? It's something to look forward to in your third years or second years in terms of the whole process when you're back in September from that point of view, which is awesome stuff. Guys, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with you, good self. Got to ask this question as well because we like to deal with the language side of things. Any sort of farewell in Malaysia? How has the language lessons been going? Are they kind of coming to fruition now because you've had a few weeks over there? You managed to sort of negotiate some of the language skills?
There's been lots of singing.
Yeah, they seem to take song as a very good way to teach you Malay. And
brilliant. Right, okay, well, you've said it now. This is going to be the official Siren entry for Eurovision 2019. Would you like to actually do a kind of choral quartet, a little song that you've learned in Malaysian, to actually just wrap up this sequence? Because I feel that the hairs on our backs of our necks are about to sort of just stand up with excitement now. So, guys, let's introduce a little sort of we can call it the computer science quartet from the University of Lincoln.
Oh God! should we just do?
I think Nathan just needs to do a solo. Yeah,
Namasaya Isabella, right?
That sounds good to me, Nathan. Off you go. On you go. After three. One, two, three.
Dear Isabella.
Genius. You know, just those words. Dear Isabella. What does it mean?
It's a song about a girl called Isabella.
She is Isabel.
Oh, yeah. Well, I see what you did there. I'm not sure it would be sort of, you know, the best of life from that sort of point of view, but it's very effective. Guys, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self live from Malaysia, where the time now, just to set the scene, is what?
5 to 5 o'clock.
Yeah. 5 to 5 o'clock, basically. 4:55 in Lincoln, England. It's 5 to 10 in the morning. You can tell us what kind of day we're going to be having, because obviously you've lived through the Thursday, so it's all been great. So I'm sure it'll be wonderful on that side of things. To Nathan, to Caleb, to Morgan, and to Alex, thank you, guys. And also thanks to Sarah Hain and Winnie. Round of applause for Winnie, please, for helping set this whole thing through. Absolutely. Thank the Lord and Sarah Hain and all that. Thanks, Skype, as well. Although I can't quite bring myself to do that. You know, still, the life continues.
Not quite, yeah.
We will see you again, I'm sure, when you return. Keep on keeping on, and farewell.
Farewell. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, guys. Standing in band called Blackfoot Sioux, of course. If you remember Standing in the Road, well done. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Stephanie Romashevsky, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Nathan, Caleb, Morgan and Alex from KDU Penang. Thanks to Joe Wodzak. A slightly fuller version of Joe's wine interview will be featured in the very near future. And, of course, to Linda Papadopoulos, talking about her Love Island scenario. Next week, on the Wednesday, we'll be focusing on the Newark Book Festival. Yes, that's right, the Newark Book Festival, with authors coming to the studio. Six Sixers. Are you into cricket, Christian? Into cricket?
Yes.
No.
Well, you'll be amazed at the author who's actually writing about the historic sixes. That's six overs, six runs, all manner of things ahead of the Newark Book Festival that we'll be hearing about on Wednesday. It's a great Yorkshire show as well, so details from that coming up too. As far as Siren Radio is concerned today, don't forget, after 7 o'clock this evening, it's Past Prologue featuring archaeologists. Mm-hmm. not just one, not just two, three archaeologists with Finn Pollard, who isn't an archaeologist, going deeper underground. Although they don't actually talk about the Jimmeriquai number. We do have some interesting lines coming through that, including how close archaeology is in the present day from University of Lincoln in the History and Heritage Site to the exploits of a certain Indiana Jones. That's it. We're out of here. It's time to say farewell. I won't attempt to actually sing songs in Malay because, after all, I'm not in Malay. But it's been an awesome show. Thank you, Christian. We will see you next week, no doubt.
Yep, I will. I'll be here next week.
That's all right. We don't really say farewell on a morning show because it's continuing through a whole day. So stay tuned to Siren Radio. You know it makes sense. Time for the news. FM.